There's got to be an explanation to all these UFO sightings, right? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
All right, my talkers, we can almost taste the stuffing and the gravy. We are getting close to the best meal of the year. We're hanging out with Lori and special guest host Brittany, if we can get her little theme song in here.
I am excited to eat. I am excited to do this.
Same.
And we are excited to also have Ellie in with us, who's one of our new producers.
I know. Ellie, say hi to the people.
Hello. How's everyone doing?
Everyone is doing good. Ellie, you're going to have your first experience with learning about a notable life. This was an obituary that was in the New York Times. And just sometimes it's amazing to read an obituary and what someone's life was like and what they did. And when I was on vacation a couple of weeks ago, I read this book called The Hop, which was a very eye-opening novel about a woman who becomes a sex icon. Basically, she becomes worldwide famous, but she works at a brothel. And she is very, like, this is what she wants to do. And she becomes this movement. Does it look like I sold my body? You know, kind of a thing. So here's who has passed away. Her name is Carol Lee. She went by the Scarlet Harlot, and she wanted to change the image and treatment of sex workers, which is a term she coined back in the 70s. Okay, so she passed away of cancer. She began working as a prostitute after moving to San Francisco from stuffy old Boston in 1978. She said she couldn't take living there one more second. And in a 96 interview with the San Francisco Examiner, she said she was galvanized into activism in 1979. And she'd started working as a prostitute in 78. But two men raped her at a sex studio where she worked, leading her to realize that if she reported the crime, the establishment would be shut down and everyone would be out of work. She said, I became very dedicated to changing the conditions so that other women wouldn't have to deal with what I dealt with. And for young people, you know, for years and years, prostitution was rarely thought of as, it was nothing but a crime, and that men and women who sold sex were viewed as criminals, even though the people hiring them were not viewed as criminals. And they were, and sometimes people were forced into that work, you know, they were trafficked or whatever. And she argued that there are people that engage in prostitution by choice, and that for many, sex for money transactions like the escort business should, you know, be treated with respect if that person is in it willingly. And her point, she was always very funny about it. And she told the Arizona Daily Star in 1985, there's so many women who make a living in the sex business and don't admit it. Topless dancers are sex workers, for example. And we've all heard the story about the wife who has sex with her husband to get a refrigerator, go on a trip, whatever it might be. So she was always funny. And there's a guy who teaches sociology and anthropology, and he said anyone who takes any work about sex work and feminism knows who Carol Lee is, because she was a staple in the movement for sex workers' rights. And she wanted to use that word to destigmatize what they did. And What else do we know about her?
Am I wrong that is this the woman who was like the Hollywood like mistress? Which she like Charlie Sheen was like attached to?
No, you're thinking of
I know
another lady. She had the parrots and she wanted to open a brothel.
I saw her documentary.
She had those crazy teeth.
Yes. Heidi Fleiss.
Heidi Fleiss.
That's what it is. Yeah. Yes. See, I'm getting these two confused.
Yes. Heidi Fleiss is still with us. I think she might be in her late 50s, early 60s. But
hey, good for her.
Yeah. Carol Lee, she went by the Scarlet Harlot. And when she moved to San Francisco, she got a job in a restaurant. She absolutely hated working in a restaurant. She said, I don't want to work in a restaurant. I'm an artist. I want to explore life. So for me, initially, prostitution was just like an investigation into what could I do? I was poor and feeling desperate at the time, and I didn't really find anything wrong with that. And then in the early 80s, she did a one-woman show called The Adventures of Scarlet Harlot, which she performed in San Francisco, and she just was storytelling, and she was very serious about decriminalization, getting the word out there, needle exchanges. When the HIV/AIDS thing was happening, she was always on the front line. And in the mid-1990s, she served on a commission on prostitution in San Francisco, wanting to decriminalize it, because she was of the opinion if you're going to decriminalize the people who are working as sex workers, you got to criminalize
people buying.
And she made videos, she organized art shows by sex workers, and in 2003 she published a memoir called Unrepentant Horror: The Collected Works of Scarlet Harlot. And
what a title.
I know it. She inspired people, and one of her friends was quoted as saying, no doubt Carol, our Scarlet Harlot, will be continuing her work from that big brothel in the sky where whores are safe, revered, and happy.
I love that. I have a few friends who are dancers, mm-hmm. and I know somebody who also is, has sex for money, mm-hmm. and there is something powerful about all of them calling themselves sex workers.
Yes.
And so you'll hear that a lot in that community.
Yes.
Because it's looked at as, this is what we do.
And Carol.
And it's all because of that. Isn't
it's
that
all
wild?
Because Carol.
People will always throw off, like, you're not a sex worker, you're a dancer. And they're like, no, we're all sex workers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and it's gone digital. You know, there's a different sense of safety for these young women who are fishing on stuff like Tinder and Hinge.
Right.
Yeah.
And all that. And young men,
and
too, I guess.
There's a powerful aspect to that, too. I've talked to them about it, is they don't have to rely on a man to find their buyers now because of that online aspect Ellie is talking about. There is a self-promotion that can exist, an OnlyFans that can exist, mm-hmm. things like that, where you take out the element of like searching for also a man to be searching for your next customer. Now, of course, with everything good, bad comes as well. You've got the online aspect where you're getting reached out by more and more people. But yeah, it's a gray area, if that. You know what I mean?
Like, I know.
It's not as black and white as everybody would say it. And you're right. I think the Scarlet Harlot led the way.
Carol Lee, she died too young at the age of 71. But man, she did a lot.
Let's get the book title one more time. Ellie's right. It's so good.
Unrepentant Horror, The Collected Work of Scarlet Harlot. And it's just all her stories. And it came out in 2003. So who knows if you'll even be able to get it. But I just thought that was a notable life worth mentioning.
Thanks for bringing that.
When we come back, Brittany, I hope you're ready to give us random thoughts.
Always.
Brittany. Very different random thoughts than Julia has.
It's all it is.
Yeah.
Okay. We all know we got Thanksgiving tomorrow. And we have Black
Friday.
Did
we know that?
I think I was aware that there was a holiday tomorrow.
Oh, great. Now both of you are giving me sass. Okay. Grant, why don't you jump on it also?
Yeah, Grant's already making, he's in the other room cooking.
So there's a thing called Blackout Wednesday.
Uh-huh.
Now, as a lot of college kids who are, this is their first holiday back.
Yes.
So this is the one where you come back, you go to that local
bar.
And like bars around
Tiffany's is going to be hopping tonight. Tiffany's. Bunny's is going to be hopping. Plums. I'm thinking of all the, if Liquor Lyle was still around, that'd be hopping.
Williams would be hopping.
Every bar right now is preparing for this right now.
Yeah.
So be nice to your servers. We're all understaffed. Have a blast, but it is officially.
That's what they call. I didn't know it was called Blackout Wednesday.
I love it.
Then you show up to Thanksgiving and you pretend you're not hungover,
but yet all that food is just what you need.
Oh.
It is like perfect hangover food.
It really is.
Unless you get too far to the point where you can't consume.
Don't really get blackout.
Yeah, don't really
Wednesday.
Get blackout.
Don't really do that.
You'll be like me and still thinking about that Thanksgiving from 2007 that I missed that meal. And yeah. I will always remember that meal that I didn't
get. I remember one time I came back from college and my mom had signed us up for delivering turkeys and Thanksgiving meals for people. And I was so hungover and we were driving all over the place. And at one point I was like, can you just pull over quick right here? Thanks,
Mom. I'm the youngest one here and I'm literally about to go home and stressfully make two pies for my partner's Thanksgiving. So I feel like a total bummer.
Oh, geez. Well, you know what? I'm not going out, Ellie.
No, no.
I'm not going out. There's people coming over, but I am having wine while I assemble the things I have to assemble. But...
Did you make that banana pudding already?
It's so good.
Banana cream pudding.
Yeah.
I have to say that I'm very annoyed with that, Ellie. I'm annoyed that we're not getting to live vicariously through you. I'm also annoyed with all the 20-year-olds that I go to college with because they are doing this thing with their boyfriends.
What?
That is driving me crazy.
What is it?
They are splitting their Thanksgivings with
20-year-olds?
Someone they are dating.
No.
With that they were splitting. I don't even like doing that as a married person.
No, yeah. You just go and have your separate Thanksgiving. If you're newly dating someone that's under a year, come on now.
Come on.
But
now.
I want my boyfriend to meet my family.
This is not the place.
You know what?
You know that.
Nothing will push the breakup faster if you're on the edge than doing that.
Mm-hmm. They won't like him.
Yeah.
You're right, Al. And nobody gets to enjoy themselves.
Pressure.
If I bring, let's say me and Grant are dating, and I bring him there, I'm nervous for Grant.
Yep.
Grant's nervous for me. Grant's not relaxing. Other people don't want to have new relationships while they, like, stuff themselves.
Yeah.
Nobody's having fun in that situation.
Yeah.
You got to slowly build that relationship so it is a comfortable overall, like, you can go on your own and do your own thing.
Yeah. You got to be... super serious to do that. And in college, you shouldn't be super serious about anything except getting your degree. However you can do it, however long it takes you. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Be serious about your social life,
yes,
the job
social.
You have. Be serious about not getting into debt. But no.
That's a new wave. People are getting married younger and younger. Mm-hmm.
That's why.
Why?
Yeah. Why?
Why?
Sure,
I'll tell you why. So they can break up with the person they picked in their 20s and start over in their
30s. Also, it's the only way we can afford to buy houses.
Let's say that. Yeah,
like, I'm going to actually have like a
right.
throuple. Yeah. Ellie, you and your partner moving in. That's the only way we're going to afford a house. Oh, are you in?
You're right.
We already got a house, but thanks for the offer.
Yeah. Of course you do. Mm-hmm. Of course you do. Another person is doing better than me. Great.
That's the other thing. People younger and younger are trying to buy houses. I think young people are taking themselves way too seriously.
Yeah. Why would you include that? Why?
Well, you know, there are loan things that people qualify for, and there's neighborhoods that need revitalizations and cities and stuff like that. So.
I'm saying, as somebody who got married later, had a kid later.
Yeah.
I had a really fun 20s.
I know. Believe me.
I went hard and had to retire some things early.
Mm-hmm.
I have no interest in now reliving that in my 30s.
Yeah.
And there are people that missed out on all that and now are trying to relive all that in their 30s.
Yeah.
Not saying that's everybody.
Whenever you do it, but I hear what you're saying there.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I do have to acknowledge. So we've acknowledged Blackout Wednesday.
Yes.
We've painfully acknowledged tomorrow's Thanksgiving. How about this? Plumbers call Friday.
Oh.
Brown Friday.
Oh, no.
That makes sense.
For bringing a boyfriend or girlfriend who's a huge pooper home, and they use wads of toilet paper and their wipes, and then they clog up the...
If you have a septic system, it's good to get that bad boy pumped before the family comes over.
Yeah, I know.
Let's put it that way.
So not only the extra guests and the extra, you know, situations happening... Also, on top of that, people are having clogged drains.
I'm Bradley Trainer,
and I'm Don McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S. the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday, so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
Broken garbage disposals because you're trying to... So that's why they've
colon house fires from frying turkeys.
Yes.
Preach. It's like that is why the plumbers are coining it Brown Friday. I can't promise as many discounts on Brown Friday.
No.
Keep that in mind.
But you're right, Grant, because my dad for years lived out in the country outside of Duluth, and he would always make you get the septic, everything working order before
We did too. We have a septic system. And
I never knew that's why he did it though.
So we had used to have a yardstick out there to measure the
That bad boy is not measuring height. No. That's for sure. That one you buy your own. It's its own yardstick. Right. It
stays too much information.
Did it have a name? Like, did you call it the icky stick?
The ick stick is so good.
What the hell is that?
The ick stick? That's what you measure your stick.
Oh, I thought this was something new that I didn't know about.
Ellie just nailed it. It's the ick stick.
Okay. Yep. We're moving on from the ick stick.
Okay.
I can feel Lori.
So, speaking of the ick stick, Ticketmaster, as we know, has been a real problematic aspect of our lives. A Taylor Swift tour.
How much were your fees for your two tickets that you bought?
It was wild.
How much per ticket?
I think it was over $80.
It
was almost 100.
Why they should be investigated, because it doesn't make any sense. It should be a flat fee. I'm proposing $12 a ticket, plus another $3 for administrative, at the most $15. It's ridiculous to have that kind of a fee for something, and it's not set.
No.
Like Pink was $50 per ticket, but it was more if your ticket was more. If you bought like a $1,000 Pink ticket, you paid more of a Ticketmaster fee. It stinks to high heaven. They are the ick stick.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And our very own Amy Klobuchar is leading the pack, saying that when there's no competition incentive, better services and fair prices, we all suffer the consequences.
Ticketmaster is committing fraud against the citizens and the artists, led by I don't care who, maybe Taylor. They need to do something about it. Pearl Jam tried 2 years ago.
And thank you. Live Nation merged with Ticketmaster, and now they're claiming that we have a monopoly. So
we do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Live Nation and Ticketmaster. Oy, oy, oy.
This is a great album.
It's so good.
It is.
I'm currently obsessed with High Infidelity. I switch songs every week.
Right.
What I get like hyper focused on.
Yeah.
So before it was Mastermind, and now I'm on High Infidelity. Yeah,
I know. Beyonce and Taylor Swift both will be in stadium tours next week, but Beyonce hasn't announced hers yet.
I know, and I have gone to Beyonce twice. I've also paid a lot of money to see Beyonce, and we'll see. I don't know if I can rationalize two.
I get it.
But if I was going to be, it would be for Beyonce.
Yeah, totally get it. Ellie and I were talking about that yesterday, just about it's so crushing that so many concerts are like so expensive. But that's why, you know, you got to just go and check out a band at First Ave or Amsterdam or 7th Street Entry.
I've stopped going to see shows where I can't get tickets under $40 within 3 days of the event.
So you got to go to local, you got to go to bars and see, you know, who's playing around town. I mean, what's it called? Schooners Tavern.
Everyone's got a good local band. Go out and find them.
Well, also,
just go listen.
If you start going to the Entry, you know, that's First Ave's little side one, you will see bands that will eventually do stadium tours. Yeah, it's happened to me at least 3 or 4 times. You'll catch them on the way up, and then you can catch them on the way down if you want when they're on the tail end tour. But I would agree with you guys. There's something to be said.
It's so fun. Okay, so I thought this was kind of an interesting interview. So, you know, there's so many daytime talk shows, and I try and pride myself on being the talk show host who knows the most about other talk shows. And so, but Drew Barrymore and like some of the daytime shows, Sherry, Jennifer Hudson, I tape all the night shows, but I just tape the daytime shows if there's somebody who I'm interested in, because sometimes there's such a glut of daytime shows. Sometimes, you know, you're just like, okay.
I have talked about this to about 5 different people at this company. Do you have more hours in the day than us? How do you do this?
DVR. It's DVR because you're fast forwarding. Okay. Like, you know, Kelly Clarkson, I tape that every day just so I can see what her Kellyoke is and if she is a good guest. Mm-hmm. I mean, the other day she did Seven Nation Army, Jack White Stripes, with the USC marching band.
Yeah, it was so good.
I mean, just I want to see what she's singing. So it's just really fast forwarding.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Between that and reading, though, can we acknowledge you get a lot done?
Yeah. But again, the DVR is the thing that is, like, changed my life for TV watching, because I never learned how to tape on a VHS tape, a thing. I would have my boyfriend of the moment, if I was going to be out on a Thursday night and miss Knott's Landing, let's say, or whatever it
was. You had him trained well.
He would come over and program it for me.
Oh, funny.
No, I just, so DVR, like, what? It was called TiVo when I first started.
Boop, boop. Remember the boop, boop.
Okay, so Brooke Shields was on Drew Barrymore the other day, and she's in a HBO Max movie called Holiday Harmony. It really sounds like something that would be on the Hallmark channel or something. But, you know, she's has an iconic career for people who don't know. Like, she got, like, her SAG card when she was 2. She was, like, I think a Downy or an Ivory soap baby. She got acting role. You know, she started acting at a very young age. And when she was 15 years old, she was in the Blue Lagoon, and this is 1981. Possibly kids looked at it. You know, Christopher Atkins, her co-star, I think he might have been 19. But it was pretty explicit. People were outraged. People were outraged when she was in Louis Malle's film Pretty Baby in 19. She was 12, so that would have been 1978, where her mom was a sex worker in New Orleans, and she was very much sexualized in the movie at the age of 12.
And you're talking about Brooke Shields.
Brooke Shields, and she was managed by her mom, who was enamored of her beautiful, talented daughter, and also was a big drinker.
Yeah.
So Brooke Shields has had an interesting life.
Yeah.
She's married to the tennis player, Andre Agassi. They went out in flames. She dated Michael Jackson. I mean, she's just been like a Hollywood person for such a long time. So I was like, I want to see what's up with her.
Yeah.
So she talked about, and of course, this would be a conversation she'd probably only have with Drew Barrymore, because Drew Barrymore also had a very inappropriate mom who, you know, let her start going to Studio 54 when she was 13 years old, left her alone, you know, for weekends when she was like 9 and 10. You know, these are things that
it's inappropriate. They have that in common.
Right. They have that in common. And so while she's talking about it, Drew asked her, because she'd had the same experience, how about how some of the inappropriate questions that we had to answer from journalists who felt, because we were, you know, Drew Barrymore's third generation Hollywood, that they felt that they could talk up, down, and at us. Something like that.
That's
I'm
crazy,
paraphrasing.
Yeah.
So here's Brooke Shields talking about when she did an interview with Barbara Walters when she was 15 for Blue Lagoon.
Of course.
She asked me what my measurements were and asked me to stand up. And I stand up, and she was like comparing herself to this little
buffering, unfortunately.
And she was like comparing herself to this little girl. And I thought, this isn't right. I don't understand what this is, but I just.
She just was nice and kept, you know, answering the questions.
Back then, I'm sure she thought that she had to. I'm sure it was an idea of you just automatically do it. I mean, Britney Spears talks about this. We look back at these interviews and we go,
oh, the Britney one was unbelievable. Oh,
it's wild. And a lot of, I don't think it's as simple as blaming Barbara Walters.
No, it isn't. But Barbara Walters and Diane Sawyer, we see that. I mean, there was in that way, maybe because they were fighting tooth and nail to make it in a man's world. They became like a man without any sensitivity. Because Drew Barrymore shared with Brooke that when she was in her early 20s, she did a sit-down interview with Barbara Walters, and Barbara would not stop asking her about the cocaine use, bisexuality, and how many people she'd been with. And she was relentless. That's all that she wanted to do. And Brooke said, well, I think she wanted the negative soundbite.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you and I have talked about this quite a bit. There is a huge benefit to celebrities having their own social media and now not being so reliant on having to do these interviews.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, back in the day, if you wanted to do a press on something, this is how you got it out. You had to go to these interviews and you were beholden to these people. There's, you know, this symbiotic relationship between celebrity and interviewer.
And in the same interview, then Brooke told Drew Barrymore, she turned to her mom, Terry, and said, how do you feel about having taken your daughter's childhood away? Right on camera. Right on camera. And, you know, Brooke later opened up, but at the time we didn't know that. And Brooke felt very defensive.
Yeah.
To she wanted to protect her mom.
Could you imagine if you were to ask that question or ask somebody to stand up to look at their measurement? I mean, it wouldn't happen nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, because of so many reasons, but one of them is they don't have to do these interviews.
That's very true. Yeah. Yeah, and then Brooke also shared with Drew Barrymore that, you know, her mom hired a photographer to take nude photos of her when she was 10. And the reason she did it, she told her daughter, told Brooke, well, you can't talk back. You just have to do it. You're going to thank me one day for these photos. I mean, but, you know,
there's
her mom,
a word for what that is.
Yeah.
It's called child pornography.
Right, right. No, we've never seen the photos. Her mom never did anything with it. But that is something that Brooke revealed in her memoir and stuff. But, yeah, it is really, if, you know, I know every once in a while, you know, people go back and they find these interviews that in the 70s and 80s, you know, where a lot of times it is a woman really, really grilling another woman, like we saw in the Framing Britney Spears.
And it's so true. I think your insight on talking about, like, everybody was competing for sound bites. Everybody was competing to be the most salacious and the most biting and cutting of all the interviewers. And I'm sure you feel pressure like that sometimes. I mean, especially early on in your career. But the end of the day is that, like, we wanted that.
Yeah.
Like, as a society, I mean, back then, the Britney Spears interview, we loved it.
Yeah.
And all right,
no, I got to get to this story because you guys will not believe this story. I mean, I've felt for a long time that just Kanye West as a person is just like one of the worst persons in the world. One of the worst people in the world. Okay. Yeah. Now, in news that literally shocks no one. Yes. We had heard that there were rumblings of a hostile work environment in the Yeezy office at Adidas, wherever that was in L.A. or New York, or wherever the hell it was.
That's shocking.
Shocking. And that Kanye was really a vile boss, an abusive boss.
Uh-huh.
And there has never been, in the United States of America, there is yet to be a class action suit against abusive bullies as bosses.
Mm-hmm.
We've had sexual discrimination. You know, we've had all these other class action suits that have happened. And anyway, so now quite a number of former Yeezy employees have, first of all, they shared letters that they sent to Adidas quite a while ago about, receipts. We feel uh-oh, uncomfortable. Here's what he did, and this is a Rolling Stone expose. He and Adidas turned a blind eye. And you remember Kanye even said he could show porn and talk about Hitler and Adidas wouldn't fire him. Apparently, Kanye being just Kanye, which is what Adidas management would say, he would stroll into meetings with a Pornhub pulled up on his MacBook. He was showing explicit photos of Kim to potential employees or people that were working for him as an intimidation tactic. He'd go, look, my wife just sent me this. And they'd show the, you know, we can already Google Kim. We've already seen everything she
is showing. What a wild word. That's your wife. That's so, I mean, wild.
Rolling Stone had 5 different employees. They wrote an open letter. They wanted a call to action. And they said he also showed some of his own sex tapes to people unbidden. And people said they felt it was a tactic to break them down and show their undying loyalty because there were so many people who would immediately quit or leave.
Yeah, he was looking for, he wanted a reaction. There was something that going on there. I actually had a boss show me for no reason a porn scene. For no reason.
Oh yeah, my God.
And it was, he wanted a reaction. He wanted to, like, you know, either make me squirm or something. There was some power aspect.
It's abusive and bullying, and it's not against the law.
Well, it can also be grooming, but you're trying to see what you can get away with.
Exactly, the testing the waters.
If they don't, you know, make a big deal out of seeing that video, maybe they won't make a big deal if you touch them, stuff like that.
Yes, and he also was wanting people to turn a blind eye because he liked to talk about bleeping his shoes to see if they felt good. You know, some of those rubber confections that he made.
Yeah.
Good Lord Almighty.
I know. I mean,
yeah.
Are we done with him yet? Like, in general, like, we need to be done with him.
I guess this Rolling Stone expose just really, I was just like, holy crap, that he really is vile. How did Kim even marry him? And how did she stay married to him? But they do have 4 beautiful children.
They have 4 beautiful, and they work in the same state a lot.
And may she get custody.
Right?
100%. Yes. All right, we'll be right back with Hollywood Speak. All right. I want to go over this with you just because, you know, we said goodbye to something, whatever it was. And last Friday at 6 o'clock East Coast time, 5 o'clock Central time, a time when the general public is off and having fun and we're not paying attention to the news, Olivia Wilde and Harry Styles' PR team pushed out the news that the highly publicized relationship, which dominated at least a year and a half of headlines, had tapered out due to the fact that, quote unquote, they have different priorities. What do you think? And I do believe that there was some substance to the relationship and it worked for, quote unquote, 2 years, because I will never forget seeing them holding hands in her gunny sack dress and wearing a knotted headband and going to some wedding in Montecito.
You and I got this relationship.
We got it.
We understood
the banging and the lust and the hotness behind it.
And we understand what Harry wants. And he doesn't want some young little thing off, you know, the runway.
Yeah, he likes an experienced woman. Yeah. He's notorious. When he was like 19, he was dating 30-year-olds.
So, yeah.
He likes what he has to learn.
Yes. I think that, I mean, it was inevitable in a lot of ways.
It was inevitable.
But let's be honest. Could any relationship have sustained the good or the don't worry, darling firing squad?
But that initial picture, it was like something like they rolled out of bed after being in bed for a week. Because filming had finished on Don't Worry, Darling.
Yeah.
Julia and I talked about it. We always knew, you know, it was an overlap. And okay, fine, we get it. Not everybody's comfortable admitting that they were, you know, were not monogamous with her, that they cheated.
Yeah.
It's very actually liberating to just say if you did cheat, you cheated. And eventually it just feels way better than lying.
Just like Eileen Davis. Thank you for being honest about that. I'm saying that there's no way their relationship was going to survive.
No.
The good, don't worry, darling,
situation when it came out.
Oh,
that,
my gosh.
That was brutal. And I think they honestly, at the tail end, like, that was a firing squad. And they had to space out even this breakup.
Yeah.
So it didn't
look
like it was right next to the all this bad press
that
came out a month
ago. But it was such a hard launch. And they want to do a soft Irish goodbye out the back door.
Not goodbye us.
Now stories are coming out. Because, you know, she did show up at his last concert with her kids, which I did think was kind of weird and strange.
She was probably like,
because they knew they were breaking up. I told Julia, as soon as his LA thing is over, they're going to announce they're breaking up, because he's going out on tour on the rest of the world, and he does, ain't nobody got time to be faithful on the road like that. And Harry's doesn't want to be a cheater, and his mom and dad also told him, do you need to be involved with a woman who's fighting over custody of a 4 and a 6 year old? Come and move in your house in London, Harry, who's 10 years older than you, by the way.
I think that they were probably like, listen, kids.
Yeah.
We have one more chance to go to this concert, because then mommy and Harry are done. Yeah. So if you want to see Harry one more time, get in the vehicle. Here we go. Hollywood, fuck it.
They're not on a break. This is over. They're done. He did break up with her.
I'll be interested to see.
He did break up with her.
Yeah. But I honestly think that, like, she'll end up with somebody. I'm going to enjoy seeing who she ends up with next. Because I just think she's gorgeous. And we've got this fight going on, but I think she'll land somewhere nice.
She really took the hit in all this.
She did. Any chance, this is a really weird question, that the family reunion, Jason Sudeikis and her get back together somehow?
No.
Not
oh, God,
a chance.
No.
It was
no,
so
because
bad.
I think he's feeling himself,
one
too.
One of the reasons why he served her, I think, the custody papers at Comic-Con for Don't Worry, Darling, and he was involved with that, and... You know, he did lay. I wonder if Olivia threw her special salad dressing at the back of Harry's head when he told her that, darling, it's all over. Heading out on the world tour. But they won't get back together. But one of the reasons why he served her is she let him know this summer that her plan was to move with the kids to London. Now, Ted Lasso is finished. They're filming.
Yep, they're done.
They're done in London. And he's back to his hometown. And well, they, I guess they lived in Brooklyn and whatever.
New York, yeah.
But I'm sorry, kids, that's untenable.
Yeah, you can't do the over the pond, you know.
Every other weekend,
no way.
Wednesday
no
night,
way.
That's too far away. And Harry's like, I don't want those kids moving in with me. So yeah, he said goodbye. And I'm sure she is disappointed.
Yeah.
I'm sure she is, because I
think she's gonna land on her feet.
Of course she
her
will.
Beautiful, gorgeous feet.
Yeah.
I just think she's so, I don't know what it is about her. I just love her. I love watching her on screen. Yeah. I love watching her act.
I wish that Florence Pugh would wear a shirt that says Miss Flo is happy again. Or something
right.
Like that.
There's a new movie that
I always thought that was so telling on Olivia Wilde's part that she farted. On Olivia's wild farting part, but that she called Florence Pugh, her star of Don't Worry, Darling, Miss Flo.
I'm telling you, though, there was a massaging of ego that was going on there that I think that you have to do when you're that role. And I think at that time she was trying
if
to get...
If we had a male director calling his ingenue star Miss Flo, I don't know. It just felt... sexist on the part of Olivia Wilde, demeaning towards Flo. And that was because Florence Pugh knew that every time the trailer was rocking, no one could go knocking because it was Olivia and Harry. And she'd let the assistant director do the setup scenes and stuff.
Yeah.
There's
no,
a reason why no one did press on Don't Worry, Darling. No one except her, Olivia.
Side note, there's this movie that Netflix has been showing me called, I believe it's Wonder, with Florence Pugh. It looks so
good.
And I want to know if it is, because it's like, it's almost 2 hours and the plot doesn't seem like it would be interesting enough to carry 2 hours. But I want someone to tell me is it good or not at right. some point in my
Wait,
life.
You mean the one with Owen Wilson and Julia Roberts?
What? No,
oh, no. No, not that one.
Oh, yeah, that was terrible.
Okay. And Valerie Bertinelli on Instagram just posted this. I am officially bleeping divorced. See, that's a woman who's happy to be divorced. You can't always apologize to someone when they get divorced. You always ask them, is this a good thing or a bad thing?
Right.
Then take your cue from that answer. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back.
For 9 years, a dangerous man terrorized women, breaking into homes and raping his victims before killing a brilliant young scientist in 1998.
The more the victims resisted, the more violent he became.
Then he suddenly stops, leaving police with a lot of clues and one unknown subject.
I'm Paul Wagner. Join me for Unknown Subject, Season 3 of WTOP's American Nightmare podcast series. Search American Nightmare Podcast on all podcast platforms today.